in reporting this book, what flabbergasted you the most about Washington Mutual?
Oh my gosh. Well, there's just so much. It's hard to know where to start. I mean, one of the things that I spent a lot of time on was the trajectory of Kerry Killinger, the CEO. And he really had this monumental personal change in which he went from this very humble guy from Iowa who really grew this great bank to this guy who started believing his own press and, you know, left his wife of 30 years and got remarried and started really paying attention to the trappings of a CEO, you know, flying off to Davos and stuff. And that really contributed largely to the downfall of the bank. So that was interesting to get into that. And then separately, one of the things that was amazing was just how much they actually knew internally at the bank that a housing crisis was coming, and yet they still continue to expand into risky mortgages. That just would never cease to astound me.
That is amazing. I mean, going back to the culture, you write about the stark differences between Lou Pepper, the previous CEO, and Kerry Killinger. And I think that the dichotomy there is really unbelievable, because Lou Pepper seems as this kind of business savvy Mr. Rogers almost. And, you know, he valued niceness above all else. And then Kerry Killinger came in and at first espoused that and slowly changed. And what do you think made him want to grow the bank so much?
Absolutely. Well, the culture was a huge deal in this story. And I hope it's a lesson to sort of all companies how important company culture is. You know, so Lou Pepper, the former CEO, had created this really great culture. People loved to work there. And you saw Kerry Killinger, as he was pushing the bank to grow larger, suddenly it wasn't okay to just be the nice guys, right? I mean, they wanted to be the people that were driving forward. Their values really changed so that they were mirroring those of big East Coast financial institutions. And you saw how that really infected the culture of the bank, and it created all of this infighting among executives and employees, and it really just eroded away what had been created over so many years.
Do you think there was a deep-seated inferiority complex vis-a-vis the East Coast?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think Kerry Killinger was someone that sort of always wanted to be part of that boys' club back on the East Coast and could never quite break into that scene. And you sort of see him try and get to that level and just not really succeed. And you see then, as the crisis hit and WaMu is sort of on the block and regulators are trying to decide what to do with it, the bank had no friends in Washington or on the East Coast. And it was because Kerry Killinger had never really made good enough efforts to make that happen.
He lamented it, though. I mean, it sounded like he said, why am I not part of this club? And why are we being hung out to dry?
Absolutely. And to be honest, it was a great question. I mean, one of the interesting things about the story of WaMu is this controversial ending and why it ended up such a loser versus others during the financial crisis. And a lot of that, he brings up a very valid point, is when the government was choosing winners and losers, it really did become about who you know. And J.P. Morgan Chase, the bank that bought WaMu, they obviously knew a lot of people. You know, they're based on the East Coast. They're the country's biggest bank. I mean, they have connections.
Do you feel that the deep animosity here in Seattle toward Chase is warranted?
I think that people in Seattle have a right to sort of feel that way. And I think a lot of it is because we've never here in Seattle gotten a very good explanation for what happened with WaMu. One day WaMu was in existence. You saw it suddenly go downhill over a 2 or 3 week period in which people were pulling out their money. And suddenly here was Chase taking over the branches, changing the branches, a very, very different culture. And the federal government never really came out and gave a good explanation for what happened. And so that left Seattle, especially, with this profound sense of loss. I mean, here was this institution that had been around 119 years on the day it was seized. And so we never got an explanation for what happened.
But it wasn't exactly that Chase was waiting to necessarily pick over the carcass. I mean, they tried to buy the bank earlier.
Oh, they did, absolutely. But they were waiting at the end. I mean, months before WaMu actually failed, they were sort of looking at how they were planning for a possible failure of the bank and how they would purchase it from the government. They were definitely standing by watching as WaMu suffered from all these bank runs that no one ever heard about for their opportunity to move in, because previously they had been rebuffed by the bank. No one wanted to sell to JP Morgan Chase.
But they knew their time was coming.
Absolutely.
What do you make of the recent multi-billion dollar trading loss on Chase's part? I mean, you write about Jamie Dimon being this person who runs a completely tight ship and seems to know everything about everything that's going on in his bank.
Absolutely. It's so ironic that that happened, because I think it's a great illustration of how our banks have just become too big. So right now, five banks control the majority of our banking assets across the country, including, of course, JP Morgan Chase. You saw Jamie Dimon come out and say, we are this great, well-run company, nothing like what happened at WaMu or at Bear Stearns, another, you know, bank that it purchased, would ever happen here. But even a bank that is well-run, like Jamie Dimon's, will suffer something like this, because it's impossible to get control over that amount of assets. One person can't possibly be responsible for all of that. So you see, that's really been caused by this whole change of banks growing so much larger.
What would you advocate, that they be broken up?
I don't necessarily think it's as easy as that. But one of the things I tried to show in The Lost Bank was really this move towards community banks. WaMu used to be a very small friend of the family institution. They were very close with their customers. And you see over a period of about 20 years how all the banks grew gigantic, and that focus on the customer really got lost. And I mean, I would say most of the bank customers I talk to, which is all of us, really miss that time when they could actually talk to someone and feel like they trusted their banker.
One of the things that you explore a lot in the book is this drumbeat of concern on the part of executives inside the company that said, you know, subprime lending is risky. We're taking huge risks. They did internal investigations and saw a bunch of these loans were crummy, and that there was no there. The business was based on fraud. They took these concerns to Kerry Killinger, and he really did nothing about it. He expanded the business. So what do you think that employees or executives should do or can do if they see a company going off the rails, beyond just going to the CEO or writing a memo and then resigning in protest?
It's a really good question. I mean, one of the things, I don't think there's a good answer for that. I think in financial regulation coming up, they're trying to put in some whistleblower provisions so it makes it easier for employees to approach a CEO or federal regulators about an issue like that. But part of the problem, and one of the things I touch on, is that there was almost this culture of Stockholm syndrome going on at the bank. So that's where you're kidnapped and you start to sympathize with your captor. A lot of the loan officers, a lot of the employees, and not just at WaMu, across the entire industry, were caught up in this whole drive to make these mortgages, and they were making a ton of money. And even though at the back of their head they were saying, this is wrong, how can this possibly work out, they were still doing it because everyone was doing it and it seemed right. And you had the federal government sort of blessing it. You had all the largest associations blessing it. And so it's hard to be the one, think about it, to step out and say, no, this is wrong, in an environment like that.
But there were people who did step up and then did resign in protest. I mean, what more could they have done? Could they have written letters to the board or gone public, written op-eds like we saw the recent Goldman Sachs employee write?
Absolutely. I mean, they could have done something like that. And you sort of saw people try and do that, right? They tried to, like you pointed out, approach Kerry Killinger, the CEO. You saw Lou Pepper, the former CEO, writing all these sort of desperate letters to people and Kerry Killinger, and nothing ever came of it. So it's very hard when an entire environment down to the regulatory environment is infused in that way to get any movement to make something happen. It's challenging. I don't know if I have an answer to what could have been done in that situation.
You write a lot about what it was like for the employees and the executives to watch the bank that they had built up just disappear. How was it for you? I mean, you watched this company, you covered it, you saw it implode and evaporate. What was that like for you?
I mean, it was really, I became very attached to this bank and to this story. And when I was at the Puget Sound Business Journal, I was also covering a lot of community bank failures as well. And I felt that one aspect of WaMu's story and community bank failures in general was that, and of course, I'm not saying WaMu is a community bank. It was the country's largest savings and loan, so it's much different. But you never really felt how everyone was feeling inside the bank. I mean, this is a very long storied company, and to see it disappear, it's literally like losing a loved one. And because WaMu had been so tarnished, it was very hard for the employees to express that grief. I mean, still, even 4 years later, they're still sort of grieving over this giant company that was lost, and there's no way to sort of cope with that.
Kirsten Grind is a reporter with The Wall Street Journal, and she's the author of the new book, The Lost Bank, The Story of Washington Mutual, The Biggest Bank Failure in American History. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Ashley Gross, KPLU News.